This is cassette number 7.
Evolution is smart, and it chooses the least of all the evils. The collarbone snaps, thereby dissipating the force. Inconvenient and painful, to be sure, but not life-threatening. A mechanical circuit breaker. And generations of bicyclists and inline skaters and horseback riders have very good reason to be grateful for it. Falling can't be the only way, Walker said. It's the main way, Black said, and almost always the only way. But occasionally I've seen it happen other ways, too. A downward blow with a baseball bat aimed at the head might miss and break the collarbone. Falling beams in a burning building might impact against the top of the shoulder. I've seen that with firefighters. Carmen Greer wasn't a firefighter, Walker said. And there's no evidence a baseball bat was involved any other time. Nobody spoke. The roar of the air conditioners filled the silence. Okay, Walker said. Let me put it this way. I need evidence that there was violent physical abuse against this woman. Is there any here? Black went quiet for a spell, then he simply shook his head. No, he said, not within the bounds of reasonable likelihood. None at all? Not even a shred? No, I'm afraid not. Stretching the bounds of reasonable likelihood? There's nothing there. Stretching the bounds all the way until they break? Still nothing. She had a normal pregnancy, and she was an unlucky horseback rider. That's all I see here. No reasonable doubt, Walker said. That's all I need. Just a shred will do. It's not there. Walker paused a beat. Doctor, please let me say this with the greatest possible respect, okay? From a DA's point of view, you've been a pain in the rear end many more times than I can remember. To me and my colleagues throughout the state, there have been times when we're not sure what you've been smoking. You've always been capable of coming up with the most bizarre explanations for almost anything. So I'm asking you, please, is there any way at all you could interpret this stuff differently? Black didn't answer. I'm sorry, Walker said. I offended you. Not in the way you think you did, Black said. The fact is, I've never offered a bizarre explanation of anything. If I see possible exoneration, I speak up in court, sure. But what you clearly fail to understand is if I don't see possible exoneration, then I don't speak up at all. What your colleagues and I have clashed over in the past is merely the tip of the iceberg. Cases that have no merit don't get to trial, because I advise the defense to plead them out and hope for mercy. And I see many, many cases that have no merit. Cases like this one. Black nodded. I'm afraid so. If I had been retained by Ms. Aaron directly, I would tell her that her client's word is not to be trusted. And you're right. I say that very reluctantly, with a long and honorable record of preferring to take the defense's side, which is a record I have always maintained despite the attendant risk of annoying our district's attorneys, and which is a record I always aim to continue for as long as I am spared. Which might not be much longer if this damn heat keeps up. He paused a second and looked around. For which reason, I must take my leave of you now, he said. I'm very sorry I was unable to help you, Mr. Walker. Really, it would have been enormously satisfying. He squared the reports together and slipped them back into the FedEx packet, handed it to Reacher, who was nearest. Then he stood up and headed for the door. But there has to be something, Walker said. I don't believe this. The one time in my life I want Callan Black to come up with something and he can't. Black shook his head. I learned a long time ago. Sometimes they're just guilty. He sketched a brief gesture that was half wave, half salute, and walked slowly out of the office. The breeze from the air conditioners caught the door and crashed it shut behind him. Alice and Reacher said nothing, just watched Walker at his desk. Walker dropped his head into his hands and closed his eyes. Go away, he said. Just get the hell out of here and leave me alone. The air in the stairwell was hot, and it was worse still out on the sidewalk. Reacher swapped the FedEx packet into his left hand and caught Alice's arm with his right, stopped her at the curb. "Is there a good jeweler in town?" he asked.
"I guess," she said. "Why?"
"I want you to sign out her personal property. You're still her lawyer, as far as anybody knows. We'll get her ring appraised. Then we'll find out if she's telling the truth about anything."
"You still got doubts?"
"I'm from the army. First we check, then we double-check."
"Okay,"
she said, "if you want." They turned around and walked down the alley, and she took possession of Carmen's lizard skin belt and her ring by signing a form that specified both items as material evidence. Then they went looking for a jeweler. They walked away from the cheap streets and found one 10 minutes later in a row of upmarket boutiques. The window display was too crowded to be called elegant, but judging by the price tags, the owner had a feel for quality, or for blind optimism.
"So how do we do this?" Alice asked.
"Make out it's an estate sale," Reacher said. "Maybe it belonged to your grandmother." The guy in the store was old and stooped. He might have looked pretty sharp 40 years ago, but he still acted sharp. Reacher saw a flash in his eyes. "Cops?" Then he saw him answer his own question in the negative. Alice didn't look like a cop. Neither did Reacher, which was a mistaken impression he had traded on for years. Then the guy went into an assessment of how smart these new customers might be. It was transparent, at least to Reacher. He was accustomed to watching people make furtive calculations. He saw him decide to proceed with caution. Alice produced the ring and told him she had inherited it from her family. Told him she was thinking of selling it, if the price was right. The guy held it under a desk lamp and put a loop in his eye.
"Color, clarity, cut, and carat," he said. "The four C's. That's what we look for."
He turned the stone left and right. It flashed in the light. He picked up a slip of stiff card that had circular holes punched through it. They started small and got bigger. He fitted the stone in the holes until he found one that fit exactly.
2¼ carats, he said. "Cut is real handsome. Color is good, maybe just on the yellow side, truly excellent. Clarity isn't flawless, but it's not very far off. This stone ain't bad, not bad at all. How much do you want for it?"
"Whatever it's worth," Alice said.
"I could give you 20, the guy said.
20 what?
$1,000,
the guy said.
$20,000.
The guy put up his hands, palms out defensively.
I know, he said. "Someone probably told you it's worth more, and maybe it is. Retail, some big fancy store in Dallas or somewhere. But this is Pecos, and you're selling, not buying. And I have to make my profit."
"I'll think about it," Alice said.
25?
The guy said. $25,000. The guy nodded.
"That's about as high as I can go, being fair to myself. I got to eat, after all."
"Let me think about it," Alice said.
"Well, don't think too long," the guy said. "The market might change, and I'm the only game in town. A piece like this, it'll scare anybody else."
They stopped together on the sidewalk right outside the store. Alice was holding the ring like it was red hot. Then she opened her pocketbook and put it in a zippered compartment, used her fingertips to push it all the way down. "Guy like that says 25, it's got to be worth 60, Reacher said. "Maybe more. Maybe a lot more. My guess is he's not the Better Business Bureau's poster boy."
"A lot more than $30 anyway," Alice said. "A fake? Cubic zirconium? She's playing us for fools."
He nodded vaguely. He knew she meant playing you for a fool. He knew she was too polite to say it. "Let's go," he said. They walked west through the heat, back to the cheap part of town beyond the courthouse, next to the railroad tracks. It was about a mile, and they spent 30 minutes on it. It was too hot to hurry. He didn't speak the whole way, just fought his usual interior battle about exactly when to give up on a lost cause. He stopped her again at the door to the mission. "I want to try one last thing," he said.
"Why?"
she asked. "Because I'm from the army. First we double-check, then we triple-check." She sighed, a little impatience there.
"What do you want to do?"
"You need to drive me."
"Where?"
"There's an eyewitness we can talk to."
"An eyewitness? Where?"
"In school, down in Echo."
"The kid?"
He nodded. "Ellie. She's sharp as a tack."
She's 6 years old.
If it was happening, I'll bet she knows. Alice stood completely still for a second. Then she glanced in through the windows. The place was crowded with clients. They looked listless from the heat and beaten down by life.
It's not fair to them, she said. I need to move on.
Just this one last thing.
I'll lend you the car again. You can go alone.
He shook his head. I need your opinion. You're the lawyer. And I won't get in the schoolhouse without you. You've got status. I haven't.
I can't do it. It'll take all day.
How long would it have taken to get the money from the rancher? How many billable hours?
We don't bill.
You know what I mean. She was quiet for a moment.
Okay. A deal's a deal, I guess.
This is the last thing, I promise.
Why, exactly?
She asked. They were in the yellow VW, heading south on the empty road out of Pecos. He recognized none of the landmarks. It had been dark when he came the other way in the back of the police cruiser. Because I was an investigator, he said.
Okay, investigators investigate. That I can follow. But don't they stop investigating? I mean, ever? When they know already?
Investigators never know. They feel, and they guess.
I thought they dealt in facts.
Not really. I mean, eventually they do, I suppose. But 99% of the time, it's 99% about what you feel, about people. A good investigator is a person with a feel for people.
Feeling doesn't change black and white.
He nodded. No, it doesn't.
Weren't you ever wrong before?
Of course I was. Lots of times.
But?
But I don't think I'm wrong now.
So why exactly?
She asked again. Because I know things about people, Alice.
So do I. Like, I know Carmen Greer suckered you, too.
He said nothing more, just watched her drive and looked at the view ahead. He could see mountains in the distance, where Carmen had chased the school bus. He had the FedEx packet on his knees. He fanned himself with it, balanced it on his fingers, turned it over and over, aimlessly. Stared down at the front and the back, at the orange and purple logo, at the label, at the meaningless little words all over it. Sender, addressee, extremely urgent, commodity description, dimensions in inches, 12 by 9, weight in pounds, 2.6, payment, recipient's contact information, overnight, no post office box number, shipper must check, this shipment does not contain dangerous goods. He shook his head and pitched it behind him onto the back seat. She had no money with her, he said. Alice said nothing back, just drove on, piloting the tiny car fast and economically. He could feel her pitying him. It was suddenly coming off her in waves. What? He said.
We should turn around. This is a complete waste of time.
Why?
Because exactly what is Ellie going to tell us? I mean, I can follow your thinking. If Carmen really did get a broken arm, then she must have been wearing a plaster cast for 6 weeks. And Ellie's a smart kid, so she'll recall it. Same for the jaw thing. Broken jaw, you're all wired up for a spell. Certainly a kid would remember that. If any of this really happened, and if it happened recently enough that she can remember anything at all.
But?
But we know she was never in a cast. We know she never had her jaw wired. We've got her medical records, remember? They're right here in the car with us. Everything she ever went to the hospital for. Or do you think setting bones is a do-it-yourself activity? You think the blacksmith did it in the barn? So the very best Ellie can do is confirm what we already know, and most likely she won't remember anything anyway because she's just a kid. So this trip is a double waste of time.
Let's do it anyway. We're halfway there already. She might recall something useful. And I want to see her again. She's a great kid.
I'm sure she is. But spare yourself, okay? Because what are you going to do? Adopt her? She's the one with the raw end of this deal, so you might as well accept it and forget all about her.
They didn't speak again until they arrived at the crossroads with the diner and the school and the gas station. Alice parked exactly where Carmen had, and they got out together into the heat. I better come with you, Reacher said. She knows me. We can bring her out and talk in the car. They went through the wire gate into the yard, then through the main door into the schoolhouse itself, into the school smell. They were out again a minute later. Ellie Greer wasn't there, and she hadn't been there the day before either.
Understandable, I guess, Alice said. Traumatic time for her.
Reacher nodded. So let's go. It's only another hour south.
great, Alice said.
They got back in the VW and drove the next 60 miles of parched emptiness without talking. It took a little less than an hour, because Alice drove faster than Carmen had wanted to. Reacher recognized the landmarks. He saw the old oil field on the distant horizon off to the left, Greer 3. It's coming up, he said. Alice slowed. The red-painted picket fence replaced the wire, and the gate swam into view through the haze. Alice braked and turned in under it. The small car bounced uncomfortably across the yard. She stopped it close to the bottom of the familiar porch steps and turned off the motor. The whole place was silent, no activity. But people were home, because all the cars were lined up in the vehicle barn. The white Cadillac was there, and the Jeep Cherokee, and the new pickup and the old pickup. They were all crouched there in the shadows.